Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Thomas Jefferson, I think the third US president. And what happened is that I had to endure listening for about 3 hours Alexander Hamilton, and that really sort of drew me into American politics. And having read a bit about Thomas Jefferson, I would class him up as one of the great philosophers or important people. And again, there's sort of contradictions in his life and story like that. Again, I suppose his moral life with his wife and children, and then having affairs and stuff like that. Sort of marrying a slave or having a child with a slave. The building of libraries and books. Obviously a very smart cookie. Somehow I just don't think we really had that many sprite cookies in Australia at the same time. We were much more of a shell of a convict colony back then. So it was sort of interesting to look at it. And the sort of the background story is that what I'm doing now is I'm going to the gym and having late at night, having an hour's walk. And as I do that, I have the Wikipedia article in front of me and I read it. Well, this is actually the Wikipedia article, Thomas Jefferson. And it's one of those things where you read it and you think, oh, I can't talk on this, it's so complex. But what I'm going to do is take a small amount of time to read a section of it now. So, Thomas Jefferson, April 13, 1743 to July 4th, 1826. And I think the A may refer to that they have it's not gone through the Gregorian calendar, it's still like the Julian calendar. Was an American statesman, diplomat, lawyer, architect, and founding father who served as the third president of the United States from 1809 to 1809. So 1801 to 1809. So this is during the Napoleonic Wars. Previously had served as the second vice president of the United States from 1797 to 1801. So he was vice president and then became president. A principal author of the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson was a proponent of democracy, republicanism, and individual rights, motivating American colonists to break from the Kingdom of Great Britain and form a new nation. He pronounced the formative document and the decisions at both state and national level. Now, it is interesting that the... I didn't really realise the Declaration of Independence was treason. And, yeah, apparently you can commit treason still in Australia. And so that really sort of kicked it. You know, that was the touchstone which kicked it off. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, and the elements of his life which led into that is quite very interesting. During the American Revolution, he represented Virginia in a Continental Congress that adopted the Declaration, drafted the law for religious freedom as Virginia's legislator, and served as the second governor of Virginia from 1779 to 1781. So just trying to actually get some dates in there. So, yeah, so he sort of came out of retirement. During the American Revolutionary War, he became a United States Minister to France in May 1785, and subsequently the nation's first Secretary of State under President George Washington from 1790 to 1793. Jefferson and James Madison organized the Democratic Republican Party to oppose the Federalist Party during the formation of the first party system. That's really interesting. Like, you don't actually understand. The Federalist Party has disappeared, and it's all really one part, different versions of the same. With Madison, he enormously wrote the controversial Kentucky and Virginia resolutions in 1789 and 1799, which sought to strengthen the state's right by nullifying federal alien and sedition acts. So back then they had a bit of a witch hunt happening in the US. And to my surprise, this is the genesis, you know, going right back, it's the genesis of the American Civil War. So pretty amazing to see that. As president, Jefferson pursued the nation's shipping and trade interests against the Barbary pirates and aggressive British trade policy. So the Barbary pirates are these from Tripoli. These are basically, I suppose, Arab or black pirates and the slave trade. I'm not quite sure it's to do with Tripoli and Libya and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty interesting that it goes all the way back. He also organized the Louisiana Purchase, almost doubling the country's territory. As a result of the peace negotiations with France, his administration reduced military forces, which is really interesting because then you reduce military forces, lay them waste to the UK coming in. He was re-elected in 1804. Jefferson's second term was beset by difficulties at home, including the trial of a former president, Vice President Aaron Burr. American foreign trade was diminished when Jefferson implemented the Embargo Act of 1807, responding to British threats to U.S. shipping, whatever that is. That's pretty amazing. In 1803, Jefferson began a controversial process of Indian tribe removal of the newly organized Louisiana Territory. He signed the Act prohibiting importation of slaves in 1807. After retiring from public office, Jefferson founded the University of Virginia. Well, is that just not so incredible? And it's interesting in that he had friendly relationships and admirations of the Indians, but he had this other idea that the Indians had to go. So, you know, if you were a North American Indian, I don't think you'd be all that fond of Jefferson. Jefferson, while primarily a planter, lawyer, politician, master of many disciplines, which range from surveying and mathematics to horticulture and mechanics, he was an architect in the classical tradition. Jefferson's keen interest in religion and philosophy led his presidency of the United American Philosophical Society. So isn't that amazing? He shunned organized religion, but was influenced by both Christianity and deism. So this is, I've got to see what he read, Locke and Bacon. So this is just so amazing that the philosophy of those thinkers got into his mind. As a philologist, Jefferson knew several languages. He was a prolific writer and corresponded with many prominent people. His only full-length book, Notes on the States of Virginia, 1785, considered perhaps the most important American book published before 1800. So after he was Governor General, he was in France at the time. Although regarded as the leading spokesman for democracy and republicanism in an era of enlightenment, some modern scholars have been criticisms of Jefferson's private life, including myself, finding a contradiction between his ownership of a large number of slaves that worked his plantations and his famous declaration, all men are created equal. Although the matter remains subject to debate, most historians believe Jefferson had a sexual relationship with Sally Hemings, a mixed-race woman, who was a half-sister of his last late wife, and and that he fathered at least one of her children. Presidential scholars and historians generally praised Jefferson's public achievements, including his advocacy of religious freedom and tolerance in Virginia. Jefferson continues to rank highly among U.S. presidents. That amazing. He's a historic dude, you know, you go. So you've got all the lists here. I won't go through all the lists. So the sections are early life, career, political career. Leading up, that's 1775 to 1800. Presidency, 1801 to really a decade. Post-presidency, which is basically Lafayette. Political, social, religious views, interests and activities, legacies, writings, notes, references, bibliographies, external links. Okay, early life and career. Thomas Jefferson was born on April 13, 1743, April the 2nd, in the old-style Julian calendar, at a family home at Shadwell in the colony of Virginia, and the third of 10 children. He was English, possibly Welsh descent, and was born a British subject. His father, Peter Jefferson, was a planter and surveyor who died when Jefferson was 14. His mother was Jane Randolph. Peter Jefferson moved his family to Tuckahoe Plantation in 1745. Okay, sorry, it's just all these death of William Randolph, the plantation's owner and Jefferson's friend, who in his will had named him guardian of his children. Jefferson's return to Shadwell in 1852, in 1752, where Peter died in 1757. His estate was divided between his sons, Thomas Randolph. Thomas inherited approximately 5,000 acres of land, including Monticello. He assumed full authority over his property of age 31. At 21. So what's also interesting is that you had this ancient European landed feudal system implanted in there. So the Americans had to wrestle with that as well. Education and early life. Jefferson began his education with Randolph children, the Randolph children tutors at Tuckahoe. Thomas's father, Peter, was self-taught and regretted not having a formal education. He entered Thomas into the English school early at the age of 5. In 1752, at the age of 9, he began attending a local school run by a Scottish Presbyterian minister who also began studying the natural world, for which he grew to love. At this time, he began studying Latin, Greek and French, while also learning to ride horses. Thomas also read books from his father's modest library. He was taught from 1758 to 1760 by Reverend James Murray of Gordonsville, Virginia, where he studied history, science, classics, as well as boarding at the Murray's family. During this period, Jefferson became to know and befriend various American Indians, including the famous Cherokee chief, Onesete, who often stopped at Shadwell to visit on their way to Williamsburg to trade. During the 2 years Jefferson was with the Moore family, he travelled to Williamsburg as a guest of the Colonel Dandridge, father of Martha Washington. Wow. In Williamsburg, the young Jefferson met and came to admire Patrick Henry, who is 8 years his senior, sharing a common interest in violin playing. There you go. Apparently, these old dudes could just pick up violins and just play instruments without training. It's pretty amazing. Jefferson has entered the College of William and St. Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. At age 16, he studied mathematics, metaphysics, and philosophy under Professor William Small. 16, my God, this is impossible. We just can't get any information to our 16-year-olds. With Small introduced Jefferson to John Wyatt, Francis Fraker, a British empiricist, including John Locke, which I have to do, I think, Francis Bacon and Isaac Newton. I don't know whether you could call Francis Bacon an empiricist, I suppose. Small, Wyatt and Fraker recognised Jefferson as a man of exceptional ability, included him in the inner circle when they became a regular member of their Friday dinner parties where politics and philosophy were discussed. Jefferson later wrote that he, quote, heard more common good sense, more rational philosophical conversations than in all the rest of my life. During his first year at college, he was given to parties, dancing, and was not very frugal with his expenditures. During his second year, regretting he had squandered away much of his time and money, he applied himself to 15 hours a day of study. Jefferson improved his French, Greek, and his skill at the violin. Graduated 2 years after starting in 1762. You notice that there's no social media, it's time to distract anything. You just got a whole, just, there's just a building and nothing going on. He had read the law under Professor Wyatt's tutelage to obtain a law license while working at a law clerk in his office. He also read a wide variety of English classics and political works. Jefferson was well read in a broad variety of subjects, along with law and philosophy, included history, natural law, religion, ethics, and several areas of science, including agriculture. What I don't understand is that how they can read so much when, you know, for me, it takes a couple of days to just read one article. There you go, I'm just a bit slow. During the years of study under the watchful eye of Wyatt, Jefferson authored a survey of his extensive reading in his commonplace book. Now, I love it. A lot of these people write these books, these commentaries, diaries. So impressed with Jefferson, Wyatt would later bequeath his entire library to him. So these books are really important in this area. In 65 with an eventful year. Was it an eventful year in the Jefferson family? In July, his sister Martha married his close friend of college companion Dabney Carm, which greatly pleased Jefferson. In October, he mourned his sister Jane's unexpected death at the age of 25 and wrote a farewell epitaph in Latin. Jefferson's treasured his books and amassed a total of 3 libraries in his lifetime. The first library of 200 volumes started in his youth, included books inherited from his father and left to him by John Wythe, was destroyed when his Shadwell home burned in the 1770 fire. Nevertheless, he had replenished his collection to 1,250 titles by 1773, and it grew to almost 6,500 volumes by 1814. After the British burnt the Library of Congress during the War of 1812, he sold the second library of the US government to jumpstart the Library of Congress collection for the price of $23,000, which is about $1 million. Jefferson used a portion of the money secured by the sale to pay off some of his large debts, remitting $10,500 to Stuart Short and $4,870 to John Barnes of Georgetown. However, he soon resumed collecting for his personal library, writing to John Adams, "I cannot live without books." He began to construct a new library of his personal favourites, and by the time of his death, a decade later, it had grown to 2,000 volumes. Pretty amazing type of stuff. I suppose that means a lot. I just wondering whether you've also got to understand that there's not a lot of history had happened back then. You know, we've had a fair amount of history of medical science. Now let's see what the time is. Okay, and have a check of the time. How long reading for this is? 16 minutes. I'll read this next section. A lawyer at the House of Burgess. Jefferson was admitted to Virginia Bar in 1767 and then lived with his mother in Shadwell. In addition to practicing law, Jefferson represented Albemarle County as a delegate in the Virginia House of Burgess. And from 1769 to 1775, he pursued reforms to slavery, introduced legislation in 1769 allowing masters to take control of the emancipation of slaves, taking discretion away from the royal governor and the general court. He persuaded his cousin, Richard Bland, to spearhead the legislation passage, but the reaction was strongly negative. I think not by him, but by the thing. The people love their slaves. Can you imagine people love slavery, people love, you know, kids going to school, all this type of stuff. I do think kids going to school is a form of slavery, in my own view. Jefferson took 7 years, 7 cases for freedom-seeking slaves, and he waived the fee for one client who claimed that he should be freed before the statutory age of 31 required for emancipation in cases of interracial grandparents. What? He invoked the natural law to argue everyone comes to the world with a right of his own person and using his own will. This is what is called personal liberty, and is given to him as the author of nature because it's necessary for his own sustenance. The judge cut him off and ruled against the client. As a consolation, Jefferson gave his client some money, conceivably used to aid his escape shortly thereafter. He later incorporated the sentiment into the Declaration of Independence. He took on 68 cases to the General Court of Virginia in 1767. In addition, 3 notable cases, Howell versus Nettleton, Boiling versus Boiling, and Blair versus Blair. These would be marriage acts, wouldn't they? But I just love the idea that he, as a lawyer, you have to think beyond and around to actually say things, and you can imagine the judge not being racist but cutting out this is not natural law. Okay, Monticello, marriage and family in 18. Monticello is his residence, and it does look like the Jefferson Memorial, so it's an interesting tape. In 1768, Jefferson began constructing his primary residence, Monticello, the Italian Little Mountain, on a hilltop overlooking his 5,000-acre plantation. Construction was done mostly from by local masons and carpenters, assisted by Jefferson's slaves. He moved into the South Pavilion in 1770, turning Monticello into a neoclassical masterpiece of the Palladian style. Was his permanent perennial project. On January 1st, 1772, Jefferson married his third cousin, Martha Wilkes Skelton, the 23-year-old widow of Bathurst Skelton, and she moved into the South Pavilion. He was in the North. She was a frequent hostess for Jefferson and managed a large household. Biographer Dumas Malone described the marriage as the happiest period of Jefferson's life. Martha read widely, did fine needlework, was a skilled pianist. Jefferson often accompanied her on the violin or cello. During their 10 years of marriage, Martha bore six children: Martha, Patsy, Jane, a son who lived only a few weeks, Mary Wakes, or Polly, Lucy Elizabeth, and another Lucy Elizabeth, after one died and a year old. Only Martha and Mary survived more than a few years. Martha's father, John Wakes, died in 1773, and the couple inherited 135 people of colour who were legally enslaved, and 11,000 acres, so a lot more, and the estate's debts. The debts took Jefferson years to survive, contributing to his financial problems. Martha later suffered from ill health, including diabetes, frequent childbirth, and further weakened her. Well, she's not old. She died at 33, would it? Right? 23 for 10 years? Okay. Martha lived with two stepmothers as a girl. A few months after the birth of her last child, she died in September 6, 1782, aged 33, with Jefferson at her side. Shortly before her death, Martha made Jefferson promise never to marry again, telling him that she could not bear to have another mother raise her children. Jefferson was grief-stricken because she had stepmothers, grief-stricken, telling him that she, by the death. Relentless pacing back and forth, nearly to the point of exhaustion, he emerged after 3 weeks, taking long rambling rides and secluded roads with her daughter Martha, by her description, a solitary witness to many violent outbursts of grief. After working as Secretary of State in 1790-93, he returned to Monticello and initiated remodeling based on the architectural concepts which he had acquired in Europe. The work continued throughout most of his presidency, along being finished in 1890.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.